thank you, and thank you to the group for this invitation. Every time I go through the first 164 pages, I renew and refresh my own recovery as I'm taking someone else through this process. So I am an alcoholic, and my name is Diane, and I have a sponsor, and she knows she is my sponsor. Otherwise, she wouldn't be my sponsor. She's been my sponsor for almost 13 years now. My sobriety date is November 7th, 2000. And I'm grateful for this program of Alcoholics Anonymous and a loving, patient, forgiving God in my life. Starting from the beginning of the book, though, I'm just going to share a little of my experience because, you know, now where I'm at in my recovery is alcohol is, for me today, no longer a problem. So it definitely was when I got here, and my thinking was about drinking, and I needed to change my thinking to change my drinking. And today now I have to change my thinking regarding everything else. So I'm kind of going to go through the work a little bit like dual purpose because it's really important that, like, once I the problem wasn't alcohol anymore, that I had to understand that I am and that I had no control. I lost power and choice over everything else, including alcohol. And, you know, one of my favorite promises in this book is in the 10th step. It's the very first promise, which says that by now, for by now, and after the 9th step, after I've made the amends, and after I have developed and begun to have a relationship with a power greater than myself, no matter what that power is called, for me it's God, is I've ceased fighting everyone and everything, including alcohol. And if I'm at that place where I'm still fighting something or someone, I am not admitting powerlessness. I think I still have power. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, step one and two and three. But step one is that I'm powerless. I'm powerless over alcohol. And when I think I have power, my life becomes unmanageable. And absolutely my life was unmanageable when I was when out there drinking, before I picked up a drink, while I was drinking, and even after I stopped drinking. So drunk or sober, my life was still unmanageable when I was early in recovery. You know, and thank God for a very loving, patient sponsor who, and I always say this, if I had a sponsee like me, I'd have kicked her to the curb. She is just an amazing woman, and she truly has brought me to put my hand in God's hand so that I can enlarge my spiritual life through these principles, these spiritual principles. This program is all spiritual. There's no part of it that's spiritual for me. The whole program is a spiritual program. But first I have to come in here and know what my problem is, you know. When, you know, and we're all sitting here is because we all drank like me. Maybe not the amount I drank or when I drank, but because we suffer from a threefold disease. Spiritual, mental, and physical. And my problem is mental and physical. And because I don't have a spiritual life, I have no values or morals or relationship with a power greater than myself, that I am the power, and I pick up a drink, my body is different than others. That it just reacts differently, and that's my allergy, and the allergy that I can't stop. No matter how much I tell you I love my children, that drink was always more important than them. I was a horrible mother. A horrible mother. Yet I loved my sons. I loved them. But because my mind would give me any convincing reason to take that next drink, and once I did, all bets were off. I'm done. Falling flat on my face in front of my children and their friends, falling up the steps at football games, down the steps at football games. You know, in any situation that I could be embarrassing to anyone, I was embarrassing. You know, and they put up with it long enough. My husband put up with it long enough. You know, I didn't think when I read the doctor's opinion, I mean, Bill's story for the first time, that I could identify with. And then I was told all I had to do was identify as how he thought, how he felt, and how he drank. Everything else is different to each and every one of us. You know, the circumstances are different. My circumstances are different. You know, I picked up my first drink at 17. I know today, I knew when I got sober and I had had what I call relief after the first experience in the 164 pages, was that I was an alcoholic from the moment I took that first drink. Because unlike my girlfriends, I couldn't stop. Even then, at a bar in Staten Island in between our junior and senior year in high school. And they were ready to go home, and I wasn't. They threw me in the back seat of the vehicle. I threw up. They threw a blanket over me, and I couldn't wait to pick up the next drink. And then I go off to college, and I think in my college years that I'm drinking like a college student. But they go home, and they continue in successful careers, and I go home and I continue to drink. You know, and still not thinking this is a problem. And so I get married, I meet my husband at that time. I only have one husband. I don't know why I always allude to the fact that I have more than one. But one was enough. In a bar, he drank like I drank, you know, and though actually he really didn't drink like I drank, because when all was said and done, and, you know, we got married and I had our first child, is he became responsible and he went off and he earned a living. And I did the best I could, too. I had several jobs. I had very good jobs, but alcohol kept getting in the way. I want to tell you that I didn't drink when I was pregnant with all three of my sons, and I can't sit here and tell you that. Grateful that they were born healthy, because two of them are in this program today. Doesn't make them an alcoholic and a drug addict because I drank through my pregnancy. What I did while they were growing up didn't make them who they are today. Just like my parents did the best they could with what they had, and they didn't make me an alcoholic. My experience is I'm sure that I was predisposed, and because I lacked a spiritual relationship, a relationship with the God of my understanding, and I was the power, didn't matter. It just didn't matter. And I know also today that no one could have or would have stopped me until I had that moment of clarity, and that didn't even happen for me. So my husband, who's now my ex-husband, takes our children 3,000 miles away. Numerous trips, as in Bill's story. You know, he goes back to the bar and then his high resolve, and it'll be different this time. Never had the high resolve, but I would always end up on a gurney strapped to in the emergency room, come to, look up at the lights and say, how did I get here again? Again and again and again. And you would think that a normal person, and I am not normal when it comes to drinking, I am abnormal, that a normal person would say, this is enough, this is insanity. And that's exactly what I suffer from, insanity in my thinking when it comes to booze. That's my problem. Lack of power, that's what it tells us in our book, is my dilemma. So numerous trips to the emergency room, and always promising them when I come out is I won't drink again, yet the bottle stashed in the wheel well of the minivan. I knew it was just getting them off my back, just enough so that they'd get off my back for a little bit until found out again, because the bottles were all over the house. I remember having a fist fight. What a horrible mother. A fist fight with my 13-year-old at the sink when he found one of my bottles and tried to pour it down. Fist fight. You know, and I have to remember those things. You know, I don't say them because certainly they're embarrassing to me, but you know what? That's who I am when I drink. How powerful alcohol is in my life, that if I think I can pick up the next drink successfully. I used to say when I was a year sober, shoot me in the foot, because that's crazy. And I know so better today. And knowledge also isn't going to keep me sober. It's by practicing these principles on a daily basis in all my affairs to the best of my ability. and having that relationship with the God of my understanding. That's going to keep me sober today, and then I have to get up and do it all over again tomorrow. Book tells me, and I love saying this to my sponsees, what a tall order. I can't go through with it. Well, you better go through with it, Diane, because if not, you're going to be drunk or dead, because that's what this disease wants me. It wants me drunk or dead. And today my life is beyond what I can imagine. You know, I was with my family earlier today, all right, whom I pushed away, you know, because of my drinking. They had it with me as my ex-husband had it with me as my children had it with me. And I come from a family of 11, and I had pushed all 10 of my brothers and my dad out of my life. You know, the last person I lived with was my dad, and I'm his only daughter. And he had enough. I brought alcohol into his house, thought he was sleeping, snuck a slug out of the bottle, and he had my number. He knew what I was doing. I was hiding the booze out in the bush, bringing it in at night. And he told me I had to leave. My dad. Someone said to me, that was the beginning of your step one. Your dad was your 12th stepper. I never saw it that way before. Until someone said that to me a couple of months ago. And he put me out, and I slept in his backyard for about 3 nights, thinking I was going to pray on his sympathy, and he was going to open that door and let me in. And he never let me in. And alcohol took me to a park bench from a loving family with 3 beautiful sons to a good job to a park bench. After jails and institutions. And I still didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. Talks about in more about alcohol. No, and the doctor's been in full flight from reality. I was full. I couldn't differentiate the truth from the false. My truth was that living on a park bench with a bottle of vodka in my backpack and eating out of a garbage can behind the local restaurant was my reality. And I believed that to be my truth. And it was, so it was. Today I see it's so far from reality, but that's where alcohol took me. And that's if that's enough and I think I'm never gonna drink again, I'm crazy. That's insane, because we're all, and I say we, every single one of us in this room and every single one of us sober today are an arm's length away from that next drink. If I don't consistently practice these principles in my life for this alcoholic. There may be other ways, and Bill even tells us that. There may be other ways to get sober, and please go find them if this doesn't work for you, but this works for me. This has been the only thing that works for me. So I'll get back to my family in a minute. I end up from that park bench in jail yet again, and from there, two of my brothers come to pick me up. And I have to put on the same stinky clothes that I lived in for months on the street that were smelly and urine-infested and just totally gross. And you know what? I'm still thinking about how am I going to get another drink? And I hear them talking and they're laughing, and my one brother up front is sober, has some time in the program, and I know this, and I always said I was never going to be like him, because he would stand in the middle of the street and chug out of a flask and throw up and chug again and throw up and chug again and throw up. And you know what? I did the very same thing that I was never going to be. So he's in the front seat and they're laughing, and they say, when we get to the green fence, we're there. I had no idea where I was going. And I'm just thinking about, I don't know, but I can't wait to get out of this car so I can go find a drink. No money, no anything, stinky clothes, and I'm going to go find a drink. Well, I end up at a rehab. That's where my brothers had me, why they had me arrested yet again, because I had outstanding warrants, and out of many of my brothers, I have a police officer and an attorney, and my father was a retired deputy chief in our hometown, and they were able to do that, why they found me a bed in this rehab. And for me, my experience is, as the thought of having the next drink on that whole trip at that front door, the obsession was removed for alcohol. And to today, I have not had an obsessive thought to take the next drink. And for that, I am so grateful that when I'm asked to come out here or anywhere to share my experience in my recovery, and I say yes, because I've been taught that grateful and thankful is an action word. It's something I must do. And I do, and I share my experience. Because if you hear anyone in this room, here's one thing I said that can help them in their recovery and to know peace and to know God of their understanding, then God says, good job for today, Diane. For today. I can't rest on my laurels. You know, tomorrow's another day. So I get to this rehab, and I have now obsessions removed, and I'm like, okay, just teach me how to stay stopped. Just teach me how to stay stopped, and I'm good with all you people. All right? Didn't know anything about this book. Didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. Didn't know I suffer from a threefold disease. And they really didn't teach me much about that. But I heard this young man's story as he was about to leave that day, as I was coming in. And he sounded like he had this. 3 months later, he was dead. And I knew that because they told us. I was still at this recovery house because some are sicker than others. I was way up there, and they kept me for 6 months. And that was just okay with me. It was okay with me, you know, because I got out and I followed every direction that I was given, you know. And so, you know, learning about the doctor's opinion and what he suggests is my problem, and my sponsor sits down and reads this book with me and explains it to me, now I get to have some kind of understanding of why I am why I am. And I'm not a bad person. And without a drink, I'm a very good person. It's just that drinking interferes with my thinking in regards to everything else in life because it's so powerful, cunning, and baffling. You know? And then I get irritable and discontent and restless, and drink makes that all better. And today, for me, these principles and this relationship with God has to make that all better. When I'm irritable, restless, and must find that same ease and comfort that I found when I took a slug out of that bottle of vodka, that I find in the relationship I have with God through prayer and meditation. So going back to my family, today I get on Facebook, and two of my friends posted two short sentences from two different psalms, but they both say in the end that I will not forsake you. So if I seek God, which these first three steps are showing me to do, because it doesn't say step one is powerless, step two is came to believe, and step three is surrender. I mean, it's not until we get to step three it says step three. So I have to concede and conclude for myself that I am these things. And you know, I can sit here and tell you I had a God in my life my entire life, and that's about all I had. I watched it work in my mom, and I can say it, I watched it work. My mom would pray and things would happen, and I was baffled by it, and I said, but I only thought it would work for her. I never attempted to find out what she did or how she was so serene when there was no money in the house and there was no food and food showed up. That's God, you know, and you know, that may just be coincidence, but you know, when I am seeking God, He moves mountains. Slowly, and not at my time and not at my pace, but they get moved. And you know what? If I tried to move them, they'd have never come out as good as how God moves my mountains and moves things in my life. So my niece sends me, after this little family gathering today, because she had seen my Facebook page, and she says something very similar to what you have on Facebook today, Diane. And she says, and I trust Him. She's 32 years old, and I trust Him. So what step one teaches me, and I'll go on a little more about it, but it leads up to this, I trust Him, is I have to get a belief in step one. I have to believe I'm powerless, and I have to believe that there's something bigger than me. Because in step two, I have to find some faith that's going to bring me to trust to continue in the next steps, 4 through 9. That I'm developing the trust in this relationship with this power greater than myself. Because if I start trusting myself again, I'm doomed. Because I have wrong thinking. I have wrong thinking about drinking and about life stuff. You know, my sponsor used to tell me all the time in the beginning is, and it would be like nails on a chalkboard, you're playing God again, Diane. Don't you see? You're playing God again. I call her and say, don't you think it's a good idea if I, anything that starts with I is never good. And she'd end up saying, and I, this is why I say she should have kicked me to the curb. I'd say, okay, gotta go, bye, and hang up on her. All right? Knowing in my gut, I needed to call her right back and say, I didn't mean to hang up. And yes, I'll do whatever you tell me. She's never, my sponsor has never asked me to do anything she hasn't done or guided me in misdirection. But she taught me I can't rely on her. My trust, I must rely on God. No human power. Human power. I can't rely on any human power. If I could, then I wouldn't be alcoholic. You know what amazes me today is I meet people in my journey that are not like me and actually live the same life I live. And I didn't know those people when I was drinking. I didn't even know those people before I was drinking. But it shows me that there is good and God is great. And I really believe that with every fiber of my being. And today, through these principles and practicing them, my whole being trusts God. And it doesn't happen overnight. Because, again, it's a tall order. So we go here to, you know, into the doctor's opinion. And I talked a little bit about the physical factor, that my body is physically different than the next person. And I pick up that next drink cold, stone, sober. That's when I pick up the drink. I just continue the drinks after I pick the first one up. But I pick it up. The first one, cold, stone, sober. And I can't drink and I can't quit. And my whole life I just didn't want to quit. I really had no desire to quit. I thought my insanity was that I was going to go on, not even to a bitter end, the rest of my life, happy as a lark on a park bench with a bottle of vodka in my backpack. That's crazy. That's total insanity, you know? So I end up drunk or in all sorts of trouble. And I didn't even see the trouble. You know, my husband not speaking to me, that was great. You know, when he left me and he took our three children, he went to California with them. He moved across the country to get away from this drunk. My sponsor asked me, what did you do, Diane? Did you call them? Did you try and go after them? Did you try and reunite with your family? I said, no. Now I could drink the way I wanted to drink because they were off my back. Nobody was watching me. I never tried any of that. You know, it talks about that in our book about, you know, changing brands, drinking only in the morning or drinking in the... I drank all the time. Once alcohol became my master, I drank round the clock. And that doesn't make any of us less alcoholic. We didn't drink around the clock because, again, it's not about the amount of alcohol I drink. It's about the threefold disease. And that's what the doctor's opinion convinces me of, that that's what separates me and makes me different. So, and I talked a little bit about being restless, irritable, and discontent. And I must find that same ease and comfort. Doctor's opinion tells us that also. And thank God, you know, just a little bit about the history and how that Roland Hazard ended up with Carl Jung. If, again, it goes back to if I had it my way and tried to arrange the show how I wanted to arrange the show, it would have never come out the way God has arranged my life today. And if Roland Hazard had his way, he would have ended up with Freud, who had a different theory about alcohol and alcoholism than Jung did. And thank God for that, that he brought that back, and that he brought that to the Oxford group, and that Ebbie was then in intervened by Roland Hazard and Seaford Grave, when he was yet again, he's going to be thrown into the cell, and they were going to throw the key away. They had no idea what to do with him. You know, back then they had no idea what to do with the lowest bottom drunks. And Roland Hazard said, "I have a way out." And that's what Bill and Bob brought to us. They had a way out. One of the names they contemplated naming our big book, A Way Out. And so that Eddie was able to get sober just a few months, and he brings the solution to Bill, who just can't stop drinking, has tried on his own resolve and tried on his willpower and, you know, sweet promises to Lois and always back to the bar, pounding, "How did I get here again?" My own very same pounding in the emergency room, "How did I get here again?" And how I said I couldn't identify with Bill Wilson, and yet I can identify with Bill Wilson. How did I get here again? No matter where your "here" is, how did we get there again? Was never my intention to end up in an emergency room again. I was going to make sure that I was going to not fall on my face again, or whatever it was, again. But all bets were off when that next drink, when my mind convinced me the next drink was okay, because the disease, doctor tells me, settles in my mind. And if it settles in my mind and the disease is in my mind, then I must change my mind. I must change my thinking. And so Abby brings this way out to Bill. And God knew exactly what he was doing. You know, he chose Bill. Why did he choose Bill? I don't know. And until I meet him, I'll maybe know. But why did he choose me? You know, I just know today, though, that everything has happened for a reason ahead of me, to bring me here to where I am today. Even the things that have happened in my recovery have always developed and happened in the way that they were supposed to happen for me to trust God more. So now Bill has a couple of months and he's working with other drunks, and none of them are staying sober but him. You know, I love when he talks about in the 11th step, he says he's vague about this matter of prayer meditation. Well, of course he is, because, you know, come to think of it, when he was new, he didn't know how to pray and meditate. He really didn't even believe in God. His story tells me so. You know, he watched from the hilltop when they would pray in church, and he learned what he learned from his grandfather. You know, that there was some kind of celestial sound of music, he talks about, out there, but he couldn't tell you really what it is. There was never any connection until he said, Ebby says, "Of your own idea, Bill, of your own conception, Bill." And so is his own conception. So he goes out on, we all know this, on his business trip, and it fails. So he knew that if he didn't get to talk to another drunk, that he was going to end up in that bar where the loud music was coming from, the gaiety, and he saw the drinks, and he knew he had better talk to another alcoholic right quick and skippy, or he was going to be drinking. And so we went to the phone. You know how ironic that he went to the phone is, because we're told now in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're told by our sponsors, is pick up the phone and call. The phone weighs 150 pounds. I'm sorry, I can't pick it up. But thank God Bill did. And God once again connected all the dots to connect Henrietta to Ann Smith to bring Bill to Bob. How cool is that? We can't make this stuff up. I can't make this stuff up. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I'm not a historian in AA by any stretch of the imagination, but I get so excited listening to how our fellowship was developed, and even kind of just sharing a little bit that I know about. It excites me that God has connected the dots, that I can be here today, and that I am useful and effective, and that's my purpose. You know, my whole life I could have looked for my purpose. My purpose is just today to show up, suit up, and let God do the rest. And that starts with these first three steps. Because again, if I don't think I'm powerless, then why do I need a solution? If I don't think I have a problem, then why do I think I need God? So all I need here in step one is a belief, the idea that I am powerless and there is a power greater than myself. And step two teaches me that. And what's cool about step two is, you know what? In step two, all I have to know is that I need this power. Nothing more, nothing less. I don't have to understand it. I don't have to comprehend it. I don't have to label it. I don't have to do anything but know I need a power, and it can't be me. It has to be bigger than human. So in Bill's story, he here on page 12, I think it is, well, actually, I don't know what page this is, but he talks about in October of 29, about when the stock market went down. And I just have a note here, because this was cool. Like, and he went to the bar again. He went back to the bar, and his high resolve, and everything's going to be okay. The fierce determination came to win, and tomorrow's going to be a different day. And here I have my note, is I get out of jail, and then it's going to be different, and I do the very same thing again and again and again. But in your book on page 12, Bill does take his first step. Actually, let's just go back to 7 and 8. I'm sorry. And I'm using this book because I procrastinated and never got a new big book for a workshop I was doing. And so I had to use this, and the pages are different. Here it says, so on page 7 on the bottom, it says, I had thought so well of myself and my abilities, of my capacity to surmount obstacles, was cornered at last. He's admitting defeat. He's admitting, beginning to admit powerlessness. He goes on to say that no words can tell of the loneliness and despair that he found in the bitter morass of self-pity, filled with self-pity. That he had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was his master. Powerless over alcohol. And here's step one. But he was soon to know, and it's on the next page, the fourth dimension of existence. And what a beautiful promise this is, if we stick around long enough, is that he was going to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. And that's on page 8. What a beautiful promise, so early in the book. So doctor's opinions in the beginning of the book, because he tells us our problem. It has to be in the beginning of the book, because I have to identify that, yes, I have this problem, so yes, I'm going to want what you're going to tell me later on. The solution. I want your solution because I have this problem. And in Bill's story, I just identify more. It's only a 12-step call for me. Just identify more. Yes, if he has this problem and I can identify with him, then I must be one too. And by the end of this chapter, that's what I say, is yes. And I'm concluding and conceding to my innermost self here that I'm an alcoholic. And my life is my life has become unmanageable. So on page 9, he said, here's where Bill hears the step to solution. Right? That, in a matter-of-fact way, Ebby told how two men had appeared in court, and that's the story I told you about Roland Hazard and Seaford Grave when they came to save Ebby from yet a jail cell. And a practical program of action, this is the solution, that was 2 months ago, and the results were self-evident. He saw it worked in Ebby. It worked. So when I have a sponsor sitting across from me sharing her experience and her story, and I see the glow in her and it worked in her, then maybe it will work for me too. And I finally have some hope. because if you're anything like me, you got here hopeless. I got here by surrender. I surrendered in rehab. And then once I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I found hope and I found desperation. I was so desperate now to learn how to live a happy, joyous, and whole and useful life. Because if I was going to stay stuck with a plug in the jug and miserable, you could keep this. Give me the bottle of vodka. I'm out of here. You know? And I'd go to meetings, and I wasn't working at the time, and I'd go to meetings maybe 2-3 times a day. I lived at that time near a clubhouse, so I was very fortunate that there were meetings around the clock. And I thought you people were crazy, because everything I was feeling, you were talking about. And I'm like, wow, how do they know I'm feeling like that? How do they know I'm thinking that? And they're talking about it. And I'm like, they're crazy. This is crazy. But I stayed, you know. And unfortunately, the women in this clubhouse were not so open and forthcoming to me. And I was taught in rehab, raise your hand and tell them you're new. And they're going to swarm you. And they're going to take you on. Well, it wasn't my experience. Yeah. They didn't swarm me. I wasn't even a threat to their husband or boyfriend. I was a train wreck when I got here. And I was an outpatient. My counselor kept saying this, then you go reach out your hand to them. Mm. And still defiant, still living in character defects is no. They're supposed to reach their hand out to me. Well, thank God I listened to her, not me. And I reached my hand out. And I found a woman who had experience in these first 164 pages. And I had no idea still what this was about. And I asked her to be my sponsor. God connecting the dots. And that was my first sponsor. And again, what she gave me through these first 164 pages was relief. I had enough relief from the pain of the remorse and guilt and shame once I came to stay. God knew that was enough to keep me here until he put the next woman in my life, who then gave me the freedom I have today through 4 more inventories. Mm-hmm. So it's never once and done. And I continue. There's no end of the road here for me. This is a lifelong journey. It's, you know, it's a long period of reconstructing. I'm still reconstructing, you know. And we'll talk more about that later on when we get to 9th step. So Bill now gives us the second step solution, you know, that there's a practical program here. And he goes on to say, he had come to pass this experience along to me if I cared to have it. He was shocked, but interested. So he listened. So he talked about his childhood memories, and I spoke about this, about the preacher and how he thought that, you know, like they just talked the talk and didn't walk the walk. And it wasn't enough for him. But he goes on here, later on page 10 here, he's talking about the God of our own understanding, where the spear really had their music, but the denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen. Evie saying to Bill, of your own conception. The preacher didn't have a right to tell him how he must listen, of his own understanding. He was hearing the music, and it was to his own understanding, his own conception, right here. Thank God that's what Bill got. Because that, from there, he brought it to Bob, and then we can be here where we sit today. And I am so fortunate to be able to be a part of this. So he goes on to the next page and he says, but my friend sat before me and he made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not have ever done for himself. His human will had failed. So now here Bill and Ebby are arguing a little bit about God further down in that page. And what to call God. And again, Ebby says, of your own understanding. Nothing should block you here. Later on in step 3, in when we talk about we agnostics, is atheists can become willing. That's all step three is about, is becoming willing. Nothing more, nothing less. So Bill takes his first step, and on page 12, here we are. Believing is a beginning. It was only a matter, and in italics is where I'm at, all right, is a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make a beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point and upon a foundation of complete willingness, and step one makes us willing, all right, I might build what I saw on my friend. Would I have, would I have it? Would you have it? I will. I will have it. So he goes on to talk about his experience in the hospital. And it's his third visit to the hospital. So Bill tells us he wasn't, he got sober a little bit, drank again, got sober a little bit. His wife pleaded with him. None of that works. None of that works for us. It has to be that moment of clarity, the window open just a little, God enters into our hearts, right, and rearranges us for even a second, and I have a moment of clarity. And something changed for Bill in the hospital that night. He himself took his first third step, because Ebby brought to him one and two. He conceded to himself that he was powerless, and that he needed a power of his own understanding. And so he takes his third step. And he humbly, he says, and this is again on page 12, maybe on to 13, top of 13, where he offers himself to God as he understood him, to do with him as he would. And later on in How It Works, we read Bill's third step. Those are the words that Bill used. You know, and he says in that, after he Prince's third step is, your own wording is okay, as long as it means the same thing as what you're offering here. So our own words, and we certainly can use Bill's prayers. I've been taught to use my own third step prayer, and I use my own third step prayer, because it means to me the relationship that I have and what I'm asking my God, my understanding, to do with me today. So then he goes on and he takes his fourth step. He ruthlessly faced his sins, his fourth step. He goes on to ask God to take them away, root and branch. His schoolmate visited him, and he was able to acquaint him with his problems, his fifth step. So in the hospital, Bill does pretty much up to eight, because he can't do nine. My brother and I argue about this all the time. He said he did nine in the hospital. I said, did he see all those people in the hospital? So ongoing debate. Because we always have to be right, right? but he does. He's ready, though. He's ready to go out and make right all the wrongs that he has done. All right? And then he was to test his thinking and his new God consciousness in step 10. Sit quietly when in doubt, asking for direction and strength, step 11. And then his friend promised when these things were done that he would enter upon a new relationship with his Creator, and that he would have the elements of a way of living which answered all his problems. All his problems, not just his alcohol problem. I love this. All these spiritual principles will solve all my problems. What a promise. Yet I came in here thinking it's only going to solve my alcohol problem. Don't worry about my relationship problems. God, I got those under control. You know, or my job, or my finances. God solves all my problems today. It's so cool working with sponsees when, you know, you see that God can have all of this, but I'm going to have this. And when you give this to God, life gets easy. When we give everything to God, life gets easy. A woman said to me, when I do the right thing, life is easy. And that's just that beautiful promise, life is easy. Because life was never easy when I was drinking. Life wasn't easy when I was early in sobriety, because I was still stubborn and defiant and had to have it my way and have to have the last word. And I thought that, okay, I won't lie, that's okay, but I'm still going to lust and manipulate. I still need those things. And that's what kept me in my bondage. That kept me from freedom. That kept me in relief only. So he goes on the bottom, on page 14, simple but not easy, a price had to be paid, and it meant destruction of self-centeredness, of all self-centeredness. So I had to what? Give up alcohol and self-centeredness? Yep. Gosh. But that's the price that had to be paid. Paid for what? Freedom from bondage. Freedom. So finally he shook his head saying, maybe we're still on 14, something has happened. He's telling the good doctor this, Dr. Silkworth, something has happened to you, to Bill. I don't understand, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were. Now, there's the spiritual experience. That's what happened to him. He had a spiritual experience. And then he gets to do what? Pass it on. So this is a classic 12-step call for me. Ebby coming to Bill, passing it on. And if I have this, if I can identify, then I must have this problem too. And so now I found a little hope and a few promises in Bill's story that, all right, let's go on. Let me hear about what your solution is. Okay? So solution, and then we talk more about alcoholism, and then we agnostics kind of splits up steps one and two. More about alcoholism just reinforces the fact that I am an alcoholic and my life is unmanageable by the experiences. I just want to check the time. By the experiences that the alcoholics have and the jaywalker. I love the jaywalker story. But I want to go into there is a solution, and only one solution. There's only one solution. All right? And that's when I make the decision in step three to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, whatever that God looks like at that moment. Because believe me, from when I made that decision, and it was only a place of surrender, that God does not look like the God in my life today. So, on page 24, I have to ask myself, do I believe this? Do I believe the fact that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink? I have to believe I've lost the power of choice and control. This whole chapter is about losing the power of choice and control, because on another page it's going to ask us, is God everything or nothing? Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. I have no willpower when it comes to drink. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force. Do I believe this? The memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week, a month, or a day ago. Day is not in the book, but I had to remind myself of even yesterday. The answer was, I must believe that, because I didn't remember today the suffering I endured and put others through 24 hours ago. We are without defense against the first drink. Therefore, if I'm against defense, I need a power. I need a defense against that drink. And that power is God for me. It could be any name you need to call your power. It could just be a higher power. You know, sometimes we hear in alcoholics, I hear... In my own experience with women I work with, get so stuck on words, especially awe. When you say awe, it's like, no, I'm not awe that. Just get over the word, you know, and the concept. Believe in the idea that something bigger than myself. And am I full of fear? No, I'm not full of fear. Well, do you have fear? You know, it's the terms in our book, and it's... If I can just get past some terms and get the idea that's being shown and taught to me here, because this is a textbook for me. This is my handbook for living a life in recovery, because I will never be as sober as I was the day I stopped drinking. Sober is without alcohol, without drink. Recovery is a way of life. So I'm never going to be more sober. I can't be more sober than I am day one. But I can continue in my recovery. And yes, we talk about recovered and what I've recovered from is a hopeless state of mind and body. And I am no longer hopeless. I'm no longer hopeless. So on page, and I know I'm getting close to the time, is on your 47, I think it is. Yes. Is we need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, there is a power greater than myself? That's all I need, is the willingness to believe this. And even like I said earlier, an atheist can have the willingness to believe. My experience is that I get to this place sitting across the table from another woman and or man, and they say, no, I have no willingness, and I can't believe that you believe, and I just can't believe. I can't go on, and I continue to pray for you, but when you have a willingness or believe that I believe or something that you can move forward with, because if I don't have a willingness to believe there's a God or there's a power, then how do I think that power is going to restore me to sanity? And how do I believe that that power, I've been blocking that power with my character defects, that I'm going to admit to someone in a fifth step, and that power is going to remove my character defects in 6 and 7? If I'm not willing right here. And so I can't water it down. If you're not willing to believe, and that's all I'm asking you to be, is willing here. This is the cornerstone. Okay? So the foundation was the willingness, and cornerstone is the belief to have the willingness that there is this power. And again, in step three was just turning, it says we stood at the turning point. And in James Joyce, this is that who writes in the back of our book, in The Spiritual Experience, William James. That line, I understand, comes from one of his writings, is we stood at the turning point, a place of complete surrender. It's in How It Works. It's right before it tells us these are the steps we took. The place of surrender. Am I ready to surrender everything I think I know, like we say in the set-aside prayer, everything I think I know to open my mind for a new experience, for this solution? And when I surrender here, what I'm saying when I make this decision is, yes, I'm going to go on to do the next 4 through 9. I'm ready to go on to do those steps. How imperative it is to concede to A, B, and C, and how it works, is that, and it's on page, so I love these, the three A, B's, and C's, is I ask you, have you conceded and convinced, and are you convinced that you're alcoholic and could not manage your own life? And this is on page 60. Have you conceded to your innermost self, and have you convinced yourself that no human power could have relieved your alcoholism? And have you conceded to your innermost self and are convinced that God could and would if he were sought? And if so, then I've surrendered. Bill says in the original manuscript, and if not, go back and reread the pages in this book up to here, otherwise throw it out. Because you don't need this program if you don't think and you haven't conceded A, B, and C. And so I think that's 7:30, and I would like to thank you for having me. I hope I covered the material, and next week we'll go on to 4 through 9. Thank you.